they currently stood. "Who are you communicating with?" he demanded. The power had been drained from every sophisticated device the servants owned. The Huragok themselves, and what they could fix, might have been an exception to the Guardian's attack. But who else was? How could the creature have reached anyone? "Answer me!" Dural brought the blade of his sword dangerously near the Huragok's flesh. "Now!" The creature swiped the slate and produced a response. "Spartan Lucy B-091. "A demon!" Dural shouted at the Huragok. "You have summoned a demon to rescue you?" Dural balled his free hand and slammed it into the slate. The front shattered immediately, and the rest of it erupted into sparks. Dural took care not to hit so hard that he might permanently damage the Huragok, but not so much that he wouldn't at least hurt it. The Huragok deflated in fear and cowered into the ground. "Go ahead and call for help. Call as loud as you like. You think a demon can save you out here? What happened to the last one that came to your aid?" The creature could not answer him at all now. It could only whimper in its own ridiculous tongue. "This is your fault," Rook said, coming up behind Dural. "You separated us from the rest of our forces, and then you let the Huragok take us even farther away." A howl from some sort of beast echoed out of a nearby wood, as if to put a fine point on this claim. It made the scales on the back of Dural's neck rise. "The Fieldmaster put me in charge. Are you questioning his judgment?" "I do not think he believed he would die so soon," Rook snorted. "You are too young, too brash, and too untrained to handle a force of this size. You are going to get us all killed." Dural had failed to put his energy sword away yet. He drew it back and took a mighty swing at Rook's neck. The Sangheili saw the attack coming and ducked under the blade easily. As Rook stood to his full height, he produced his own energy sword. He had intentionally provoked Dural to give himself an excuse to seize the mantle of leadership, and Dural cursed himself for giving into it. "Do not be a fool," Dural told him. "We have more pressing concerns than this." As the words left his lips, he knew he had wasted his breath on them. "Speak for yourself, Pale Blade. You are but a shallow reflection of the Fieldmaster, and I will reclaim the servants from you to reverse the mistake he made by putting his trust in you." It pained Dural that Rook would fall from grace, when Rook had been such a fruitful ally early on in this mission. But that would not stay Dural's hand. The Pale Blade threw himself at Rook, his sword held high, and he brought the edge down with both hands. Rook got his own blade up just in time to save his life, but not fast enough to keep his face from being scorched by the edge of Dural's weapon. The wounded Sangheili howled in anger as the pain took hold, shoving Dural back. The strike had caught him across his eye, blinding him. Rook came at Dural, swinging wild and wide. The Pale Blade ducked underneath the clumsy attempt and slashed Rook across the chest. Rook fell back, and Dural pressed his advantage. He hammered at Rook mercilessly, letting his anger fuel his strength. After a while, Dural felt as if his arms might give out, but he managed to outlast Rook. Just as Dural thought he might have spent himself too fast, his last blow knocked Rook's sword from his hands. Rook hesitated, and Dural wondered if he might fall to his knees and beg the Pale Blade to take his life immediately and cover his shame. Instead, Rook charged straight at Dural and tried to take him barehanded. Foolish as it was, the Pale Blade admired him for that. Rook refused to give up. Not for anything. In return, Dural slashed Rook across his throat, granting him the quick death he had been too proud to demand. He collapsed at Dural's feet. "Anyone else care to question my judgment?" Dural said to the rest of his vanguard as he extinguished his sword with confidence. None of them even dared look him in the eye. Chapter 32. Molly didn't think they would have ever caught up with the servants if the Sangheili hadn't stopped to fight with each other. It was challenging enough that the servants were faster than the three of them, which was no surprise given how much stronger and taller Sangheili were. But the servants also had the advantage of knowing where they were going. Molly, Gudam, and Karim only had distant glimpses of the servants and their hostages, and eventually the muffled sounds of a battle to keep them on track. As the three rounded a dense corridor of foliage, Gudam spotted something, and she held out her oversized hand in front of Molly and Karim. Yet another pair of monsters, things Molly had never seen before, were lurking in the edges of the gathering shadows as dusk fell across the land. These were strong, four-legged, panther-like creatures, not much smaller than a Rafikrit and covered with a thick layer of dark green fur that helped them blend in with their grassy surroundings. Their large jaws were lined with long feline teeth, and they looked as though they had been bred to hunt and kill. The pair of beasts were slowly edging forward on their bellies, creeping toward the servant's position and readying an attack. If the creatures had not already been hunting the servants, Molly, Gudam, and Karim might have been targeted by them as well. Molly felt grateful to be armed, even with a Covenant weapon, but she wondered what good it could do against such animals. Molly had never shot a living thing in her life, but the adrenaline pumping in her body had heightened her senses and made her keenly aware that her actions, including being willing to use her weapon, could make the difference between her surviving and dying that day. Keeping a careful eye on the predators as Molly led the way did not work as well as she would have liked. As she attempted to circumnavigate the creatures and come at the servants from the side, she realized too late that their movements had put the creatures downwind. The animals that had been hunting the cluster of Sangheili in the brush swiftly picked up the scent of the three youths and began following them instead. Molly started to tremble, but steadied her hands. The animals kept their distance at first, staying roughly 200 meters away. They were curious and not yet ready to commit themselves to an attack. But whether they had been spotted did not matter to them. These animals would win the fight against the three of them either way. Molly wanted to move forward and concentrate on getting back Bakar and Prone. Yet she knew that if Karim, Gudam, and she let their guard down, the animals would be on them in a second. She breathed a measured sigh of relief when they finally approached a pair of glowing energy swords clashing with each other, roughly 100 meters ahead. She didn't know what had set two of the servants brawling, but they had given up their position and Molly hoped the three of them would be able to keep up with the servants from there.
"Are those things back there hunting us?" Gudam said in a whisper. "I wouldn't ask, but it seems like they are, and if they are, then that might mean something for an idea I have."
It looked like they were tracking the servants first. Karim gave the creatures a sidelong look. "But now that you've said that..."
"What's your idea?" Molly asked. "We just need to get on the other side of the servants, between them and wherever they're going. If we can do that, we might be able to use those beasts to solve our servants' problem, if you know what I mean,"
Gudam said, with hope in her eyes. "You're gonna try to attract those things into the servants' path?" Karim said with a worried look. "And then see what happens?
That sounds really risky."
Gudam nodded and then, without another word, took off in a clambering sprint using her forelimbs. She headed in a wide arc around the servants' current position, circling about the flat hill they'd stopped upon. Molly and Karim followed as quickly and quietly as possible, glancing back at the animals in their wake. The grasses were tall enough to almost entirely hide the Ungoy, and the encroaching darkness gave her additional cover as well. But both Molly and Karim were fairly exposed to the creature's view. Molly and Karim were about halfway around the servants when she realized that Gudam's plan had a flaw.
"What's going to happen when the creatures are done with the Sangheili?" she asked, peering at them over Karim's shoulder. "Won't they just turn on us?"
"Probably," Karim said with a shrug. Despite her reservations about the plan, Molly realized they'd run out of time. Evidently, the two predators had become bored with the pursuit and were now moving toward them faster. They had fixed their feline eyes on Molly and Karim, and they would not be denied any longer. The creatures sped up as they approached from 100 meters, their strong muscular legs pumping like those of the great cats Molly had seen on Earth. Her heart began to thud in her chest as she lifted her weapon alongside that of Kareem. 100 meters became 80. The creatures got closer with every beat of her heart. When she fired, she knew it would alert the Sangheili, and then she and Kareem would be trapped between the servants of the abiding truth and a pair of massive animals that seemed to be evolved to kill. 50 meters became 30. Molly opened fire. Her plasma rifle pulsed in her hand, sending superheated energy into the face of the nearest creature. The blast stitched a line of burns across the snout of the frontrunner, and the beast skidded to a halt, howling in pain. Its companion stopped right beside it, unharmed, but now wary. The creatures were now roughly 20 meters away. The one Molly shot dragged its enormous paw across its face, as if it could wipe away the burns. She wondered if it was the first time the thing had actually felt pain, and it simply didn't recognize the sensation.
"Good work," Kareem said, catching his breath. "But we've got company."
She glanced over to where he was pointing, and saw a handful of Sangheili stomping toward them, twice the distance away as the large cats. One of the warriors shouted something in Sangheili.
"Surrender, fledglings,"
Dural's voice came from beyond them, evidently demanding their surrender in Sangheili. As he approached, he stopped where he was and kept his energy sword on Bakar. One slight move, and he could cleave the young Sangheili's head right off. The handful of warriors who approached leveled their rifles at the two of them, and Molly knew that they were about to die right there in the middle of nowhere. She considered fighting them. If she was going to die, it'd be pumping plasma into their chests. But Kareem took that decision away from her. He lowered the barrel of his rifle and pressed his hand on Molly's until it was pointed toward the ground as well.
"What are you doing?"
she asked. With their weapons down, Kareem sidled away from the warriors and sent an eye back at the creatures, whom the Sangheili hadn't seen yet.
"Just trying to figure all the angles," he said in a hushed voice.
"Is giving up one of them?" Molly asked. The Sangheili kept their weapons trained on them as they drew closer.
"Patience," Kareem whispered. "Just hold still. When you hear the signal, follow me."
"Signal?" The Sangheili warriors approached with a mixture of curiosity and abandon. They didn't want to relinquish their cavalier attitude for a couple children, but yet they didn't quite know what to make of them. Molly and Kareem were half their size, but they bore weapons too.
"You should not have followed us," Bakar called out to them. "Leave me to my fate."
The closest of the warriors pointed his storm rifle at Molly's head. With Kareem's hand still on her weapon, she stopped arguing and finally let it fall limp in her hands. She gave Kareem a sidelong glare.
"Go ahead with that signal any time now."
"It's not mine to give," he said with a knowing smile. Molly stood there confused for just an instant, but when she realized what he meant, her eyes went wide.
"Seriously?"
Precisely then, the signal sounded. From somewhere on the other side of the Sangheili, Gadam screeched at the top of her lungs. The warriors coming from Molly and Kareem spun around to see what was making the deafening sound. When they did, Kareem grabbed Molly by the arm and hauled her into the tall grass at a breakneck pace. They sprinted away from the Sangheili, clutching their rifles tight, but not bothering to look back. Molly wondered what would bring them down first. A vicious claw in the side, or a plasma blast in the back? But neither came. The creatures that had been stalking Molly and Kareem roared so loud they sounded like cannons. Gadam's scream had done the trick, just as it had with the Ruffacrete. The beasts barreled toward the sound, which put them right on a path with the Sangheili. Molly and Kareem reached the top of a knoll and glanced back to see the Sangheili warriors spin toward the creatures, bringing their weapons to bear. Then Kareem grabbed Molly's hand again, turned, and bolted down the ridgeline of the knoll. As they went, he started to lead them back around toward their enemies in a wide circle. Molly understood. They still had to reach Bakar and Prone.
She glanced back to watch the servants firing on the creatures head-on. One of the beasts simply ignored the pain and barreled right into the servants. It exposed its massive maw as it lunged at a warrior, opening it wide like some vicious steel trap. The creature fit more than half of the hapless Sangheili into its mouth with a single bite, then clamped down its teeth, separating its prey in two. Molly's stomach climbed into her throat at the sight. This was going to get ugly. Chapter 33. Rook's warm blood was still spilling from his throat when the servant spotted the two human fledglings creeping up on them. Still stunned by Dural savagely putting down Rook's challenge to his leadership, the other warriors hesitated to act. Dural was not nearly so sanguine. "Get them, fools!" he roared until the others finally snapped into action. Asim shouted at the human fledglings that they should not have followed the servants there, and Dural agreed. The idea that the two of them, mere children, could sneak up on the servants in the middle of the wilderness and take them down with only a pair of rifles was beyond ludicrous. What were they thinking? Dural did wonder, however, how they had managed to keep after them this entire time. They must have watched as he slew the demon, when the Spartan foolishly tried to keep them from going through the portal. And then, perhaps, they had continued to hound their trail. Dural had to respect the fledgling's bravery, despite their foolishness. "Allies of yours?" Dural questioned Asim. "I do not know them." Dural knew his own blood much better than that. "You always were a terrible liar, brother." Then a strange scream blared from behind them. Dural realized he had heard such a sound before, when the fieldmaster had tortured an Ungoy who had attempted to betray the servants to the Arbiter. But why an Ungoy would be out here howling in the middle of nowhere, Dural could not say. It must have come with the humans, who now were running away. "Shoot them!" Dural barked at his warriors. "Shoot!" Then Asim punched him in the throat. Had Dural been watching him, Asim would never have managed it, but his friends had distracted Dural. Asim then tried to snatch the storm rifle from Dural's back, but the pale blade managed to knock it away from both of them instead. Dural staggered back, clutching at his neck as he gasped for breath and brandished his energy sword in front of him. He tried to call his warriors, but he could not get the words out. He could not signal them either. They were not looking in his direction, or even that of the humans. They were completely transfixed by something they saw in the brush instead. That was when Dural saw them too, a pair of new creatures that emerged from the encroaching dusk and stampeded toward his warriors. The beasts unleashed ferocious howls that curdled Dural's blood. He realized they had been sorely tricked. The Ungoy had not been screaming in fear. It had been calling the beasts. One of them grabbed a warrior in its teeth as it trampled over another. The second tore into yet another warrior as the rest of Dural's vanguard began firing at both beasts. Dural finally managed to clear his throat, and he gave his warriors their orders. "Run!" he shouted in a hoarse voice. "Make for the cathedral! Run!" Then he grabbed Asim by his arm and attempted to drag him away. But his brother dug in his heels and refused to move. Dural looked at him cockeyed. Is it really possible? Asim would rather be devoured by these creatures than come with me? Dural struck him with the back of his hand, and his brother fell to the ground. He cursed, thinking that he would now have to carry Asim back to the base. And for what? So he could execute him in front of the others? Or had he subconsciously nursed the possibility Asim might recant his heresy and join the servants of the abiding truth? Either way, Dural needed to recognize that his brother wasn't worth it. He had just decided to leave Asim for the monsters and personally escort the Huragok to the cathedral instead.
when his knee gave out beneath him with a sickening crack. He bellowed in agony and tumbled onto his back, to find Koenig standing over him, a cruel cackle rolling from his jaws. "You're not a bad leader, fledgling," the old warrior said, "but you're too dangerous to lead the servants of the abiding truth." Durell turned over onto his hands and tried to climb to his feet, but his broken knee would not support his weight.
"Traitor! Coming from you?"
Koenig balled his fist and slammed it against his own chest in a mock salute.
"I could no longer tolerate your volatile arrogance, besmearing the shadow of the Fieldmaster you claim to esteem. His legacy is maligned by your lack of prudence. Who do you think the real traitor is?"
Durell roared after him in utter frustration as Koenig turned and left.
"You cannot outrun those beasts, fool!"
"I do not have to outrun them, Paleblade," Koenig said as he sprinted away. "I only have to outrun you."
Durell hurled curses after him and prayed to the gods to bring the traitor the fate he ripely deserved. They might not do Koenig any harm, but they were all Durell had left. Then Durell felt hands upon him, as Asim grabbed him and hoisted him to his feet. Durell grunted at him in pain, as Asim draped his arm over his shoulders.
"What are you doing?"
"Saving your life, I hope." Asim cast a wary eye toward the creatures still engaged with the Sangheili. Despite all the years and light years that had passed between them, this was still Durell's brother, little Asim, almost full-grown now. Although Durell had been prepared to kill him only seconds earlier, somehow Asim refused to leave him to his own death. "All right," Durell said, as he hopped along on his one good leg. "Let us see." While Asim helped him, Durell watched the rest of his warriors scatter. He did not know if they had seen what Koenig had done, but that did not matter. He had ordered them to flee, to save themselves, and only time would tell if they would succeed. The servants had all fled in different directions. Koenig had been right, Durell saw. They did not need to outrun the monsters. Only each other. With luck, they would only lose a few warriors and the rest would escape, including the ones dragging the Huragok along with them. And if the gods provided, both Durell and Asim would be among the survivors. Durell limped along, using his brother for support, the two of them striking out for the cathedral as quickly as they could. As they went, Durell could hear the screams of one of his warriors as he fell prey to the creatures and was devoured alive. The sounds went on for far too long, but when they were finally cut short, Durell worried even more about what might follow. Would that beast's hunger be sated? Or would it come next for those who remained? Even as he and Asim fled, Durell began to think about what he would do to Koenig if they both made it back to the base. The pain that stabbed through his leg with every half-hearted step he could take reminded him of Koenig's treachery. He had no hope that any of his warriors would kill Koenig for him. If he was to maintain his leadership, Durell would have to put an end to the malcontent himself, and in the most brutal fashion. But he realized that things could never be the same. If he returned to the base with his leg broken like this, he would be expected to kill himself in shame. If he refused, he would fall prey to another ambitious Sangheili for sure. Durell was finished either way. No Sangheili warrior would follow the lead of one so damaged. The code of their people was crystal clear. He would be lucky if they didn't slaughter him out of mercy. Even if he survived, he would face an endless stream of interlopers who envied his position. Would he wind up battling against his own warriors until either he perished or was alone? Would that be his lot for the rest of his life? Durell realized he only had one way out of this. He put his fingers to his mouth and blew out a piercing whistle. Asim loosened his grip on his brother in sheer horror.
What are you doing? Are you insane? Run, brother.
Dural pushed Asim away with a single shove.
I am putting my fate in the hands of the gods. I am heading toward my salvation or my doom. Leave me! No, Dural.
Asim backed away from him.
No!
Dural could hear a monster coming at him now, huffing its horrible breath. Its feet thundered against the ground, boring through the tall grass that surrounded them, growing louder with each step. He could feel the beat hammered out in the turf beneath them. Was the beat a prelude to his epitaph, or his triumph?
Only the gods know.
Run, Asim. Dural closed his eyes and whistled one more time.
Run!
Chapter 34. Molly couldn't believe what Bakar's brother was doing. She had only hoped to use the chaos the creatures created to scatter the Sangheili long enough for Bakar and Prone to flee. She hadn't expected Dural to take them on himself. Prone still hadn't gotten away from its Sangheili escort, but Molly saw that they'd at least gotten it out of the path of the monsters. When Dural called one of the beasts straight to him, though, Bakar just froze there next to him, too shocked to run. The monster charged at Dural, who stood before it, balancing on his one good leg. He closed his eyes and activated his energy sword, holding it out to his side. What is he thinking? As the creature barreled toward him, Dural shifted quickly to the side, bringing his sword into place just in front of him. Before the monster reached him, Dural, with his eyes still closed, raked the blade through the air and sprang up on his single leg. The beast snapped at the sword, and its scores of vicious teeth bit into the blade, causing it to cry out. The energy crackled along the length of the sword, scorching the monster's mouth. But rather than frighten the beast, this only seemed to enrage it. The creature bit down even harder on the blade, shattering it between its jaws. As the monster whipped past him, Dural finally opened his eyes and caught its shoulder with his hand. Using the beast's momentum, he swung himself up and around so he could clamber atop the creature's neck. From there, the Sangheili dug his hands tight into the beast's thick fur and held on for his life. Bakar stumbled backward out of the animal's way and watched as the creature raced off into the darkness, his brother still astride it. Dural, he shouted after him. Dural! Get away from there, Karim shouted at Bakar. Run! At first, Molly wasn't quite sure why Karim was yelling. The monster that had charged at Dural was far gone. Then she remembered. There wasn't just one. The other beast had also heard Dural's whistle, and after it had finished tearing apart a hapless pair of Sangheili warriors, it was now heading toward Bakar to investigate. To complicate things further, the rest of the servants hadn't all managed to escape. A pair of them were still struggling with Prone to Drift, trying to get him to cooperate. Some others had stayed nearby, trying to predict which way the creatures might run and how to best evade them. Molly soberly realized that even if she and her friends survived the last creature, they might still have to deal with the rest of the servants. The remaining beast came slowly and methodically this time, snuffling over toward Bakar as if it had found something new to chew on. The Sangheili did his best to stay absolutely still, giving the animal the same penetrating stare he gave everyone else. The beast didn't seem impressed, and Bakar had nowhere left to run. Molly took a deep breath and cringed as the creature edged to barely more than a meter in front of Bakar's unwavering eyes. At that moment, something came roaring through the sky, piercing the air all around. It startled the creature, causing it to back away from Bakar as it scoured the sky for the source of the noise. The sound had begun as a low rumble, but rose in pitch and volume as it grew closer. Molly shaded her eyes to peer toward whatever was making the noise, and she finally spotted it, a UNSC Pelican dropship bearing straight for them and coming in fast. Molly realized only one person could be in that craft.
Lucy.
Prone must have told her where we are. Molly couldn't help grinning with relief. If Lucy could bring the Pelican down somewhere nearby, they might actually survive. Hope sprang anew in her heart. The creature also noticed the source of the sound, but seemed unbothered by the approaching vehicle. No longer spooked, it returned its attention to Bakar, who had moved to join Molly and Kareem at the top of a hill. When the monster realized that Bakar had slipped away, it exploded toward them, refusing to lose its catch. Molly and the others turned and sprinted away as fast as they could, and the creature gave chase. Without a word, they each split up in a different direction, fanning out across the grassland. For some reason, the creature now seemed to have set its heart on Molly. She heard Kareem, Bakar, and even Gadam, who had now rejoined them, shouting at it. They whistled and screamed, trying to draw its attention, but this monster was not distracted for an instant. Perhaps the noise from the pelican's approach had drowned out everything else, or maybe the animal had simply fixated on her. Either way, she feared that only seconds separated her from death, and she was growing too tired to evade it any longer. She was about to close her eyes and give up. If the creature killed her, she hoped it would at least take long enough at it to give the others a fighting chance to escape. Right then, the pelican swung around from out of nowhere, slamming its tail into the creature and driving it into the turf behind Molly. The beast let loose a terrifying bellow of pain as the aircraft ground it into the dirt, breaking bones and tearing flesh. As the ship's tail swung around to face Molly, the animal stopped moving altogether. Molly stood there, shocked and dumbfounded, and tried to catch her breath. The pelican's rear hatch popped open. A moment later, Lucy stepped out, clad in her Mjolnir armor, a battle rifle in her hands. "You all right, kid?" Molly gasped enough air to answer.
"I am now."
Lucy leaped down from the hovering pelican and hefted Molly up into it. As she did, she spotted Bakar, Kareem, and Gadam approaching from the distance. "Let's make this quick, folks. Those Sangheili over there don't look like they're interested in just letting us go."
"Prone to drift," Molly said, remembering the Hurragok. "They've got prone."
"Not for long, they don't."
Chapter 35. Lucy B-091 moved past Molly, charging headlong toward the servants at the edge of the clearing as they hauled their kidnapped Hurragok behind them. "Get to the dropship," she shouted to Kareem and Bakar as she raced past them. "Lock yourselves in." Bakar reached the pelican first, and Kareem rushed in only a moment later, followed by Gadam, who waddled up from behind. After she entered, Molly slammed her fist against the bay door release and sealed them in. She quickly made her way up to the cockpit, where she found Kareem in the pilot seat and Gadam in the co-pilot seat. As Kareem gently spun the pelican's nose around, Molly stood next to Bakar and peered over their shoulders to watch Lucy at work. Although Molly had always thought of Lucy as a superhero, the servants who remained outnumbered her several times over. As Tom had back at the portal, she moved with such speed and fluidity that most of them could not get a bead on her, and she targeted those who did. In time, however, she struggled to keep up with the barrage of incoming fire and a lack of decent cover. On top of that, the fact that she couldn't unload her weapons on them all for fear of killing prone with a stray shot hampered her efforts.
"We need to help her," Molly said to Kareem. "Can you operate this thing's guns?"
"I think so." He grabbed a second set of controls, and Molly felt the gimbal underneath the ship's nose grind to life. A heads-up targeting circle appeared painted on the viewport in front of him. "It's working," he said confidently. "Just like in the simulator." He pulled a trigger,
and the heavy autocannon right underneath the nose fired, tearing up a bit of the grass directly in front of them.
"Wow, that'll do the trick," Karim said,
now guiding the reticle toward the mass of servants firing from the tree line.
"Careful," Gadam said. "You'll shoot Lucy."
"She has armor," Bakar said. "I am more concerned about prone to drift."
Apparently Lucy was too. As they watched, she shot one of the servants holding down prone, and the Huragok somehow slipped free of the other, which had been distracted by the gunfire from the pelican. Now loose, prone hauled up its tentacles and began soaring high into the trees, putting it completely out of the reach of any Sangheili's hand. But not their weapons. Unwilling to let their captive go, some of the servants trained their rifles on prone, and Lucy came at them in an all-out rush. When they were forced to turn their attention to her, they fired on her from all sides. Initially, her shields took the brunt of it, but Molly knew they couldn't protect her forever.
"Shoot!" Molly shouted at Karim.
"No!"
He hesitated.
"What if I hit her? That's what her armor's for. And if you don't shoot, she'll be dead either way. Shoot!"
Karim lined up the circle on the pelican's viewport with the wall of servants directing their fire toward Lucy, and he squeezed the trigger on the ship's controls. The chin-mounted autocannon sprang to life with a beastly thrum and began pouring out hot metal slugs at the servants. Several of them spun about and returned fire, but it was too late. They hadn't thought of the pelican as a threat, and although they were determined to correct that mistake, Karim's booming shots began to hit their marks. The steady volume of heavy firepower easily overwhelmed the Sangheili warrior's armor, ripping it to shreds, and one after another the servants fell. Most punched through by hundreds of rounds before they could take cover. Those who remained, somehow having found cover among the trees, began taking pot shots at the pelican's cockpit and engines.
"Keep it up," said Bakar. "The armor of this aircraft can only take so much."
Gadam stared out at the carnage in silent horror, and Molly had to sympathize with her. While they knew the servants would have done the same to them, if not worse, none of them had wanted to kill anyone.
"One with a grenade on your right," Molly said to Karim.
He deftly swung the pelican in that direction, still letting loose with the guns, and pulverized the servant mid-throw. The hapless warrior dropped the live grenade among his fellows, and the explosion sent a fountain of dirt and dark blue blood into the air. Molly patted Gadam on the shoulder, trying to comfort her. It wasn't fair that they'd been pushed into this, but there weren't any other options. This wasn't murder. It was self-defense. They were protecting themselves. They were protecting Lucy. They were protecting Onyx. In less than a minute, Karim had taken out all of the servants, and the pelican's guns wound down, smoke writhing from their hot barrels. Prone floated over to the ship as Karim opened the hatch, but Molly ignored the Huragok while she sprinted across the broken ground to reach Lucy, who wasn't moving. When Molly found her, Lucy had a dead servant draped across her. Or parts of one, at least. Molly tried to pull the Sangheili off, but he proved too heavy. Fortunately, Bakar raced up and lent a hand, dragging away the warrior's corpse. Lucy had a hole burned into her right leg where a plasma blast had gone straight through her armor. The hot plasma seemed to have cauterized the wound, so she wasn't bleeding, but she wasn't moving either. Lucy suddenly reached up and wrestled her helmet off, then gasped for fresh air.
"Ow," she said in a soft, raw voice, looking at the hole in her leg. "That's going to leave a mark."
"You're alive."
Molly wanted to wrap her in a hug, but was afraid she might injure her.
"Spartans never die."
Lucy grimaced in pain as she tried to move her leg.
"But that doesn't mean we don't hurt."
Molly and Bakar helped the Spartan to her feet, though it was Lucy doing most of the work. They could only do so much to assist someone in armor that weighed as much as a dump truck. Lucy leaned slightly on Bakar as she limped and hopped her way back to the pelican.
"How did you know where to find us?" Molly asked. "Prone sent me a message asking for help.
Whenever he sends me anything, I know it's important. He and I go way back. We're pretty tight. You know, I was the first human he ever met.
How much do you know about what is happening in Paxopolis, then? Bakar asked. The Guardian shut down the power of the entire city and the research complex.
The Guardian?
You mean the thing from Project Goliath?
Lucy stopped for a moment to catch her breath.
Well, it might have taken out all of the power inside Trevelyan and Paxopolis, but I was pretty far away when that went down. Whatever it did, it didn't reach me.
By the time the group made it to the Pelican, Gadam already had prone to drift secured in the passenger bay. Lucy crawled into the space and lay down on the open floor, her breathing still ragged.
Sorry, kids, but there's no way I'm climbing into that cockpit right now. We'll have to hunker down here and wait for a ride.
What about the rest of the servants? Molly asked. They could be on their way here right now.
We'll just have to lock up and take that chance.
Kareem's a pilot, Gadam said. He can take us wherever we need to go. Lucy peered toward where Kareem was still sitting in the cockpit.
Ever flown a Pelican before?
Lots of times.
In simulation.
Lucy winced in pain and lay back down again.
Well, we're not talking about flying it into a dogfight. That might do.
Kareem started to go through the ship's pre-flight procedure.
Where should we go?
Back to the Pax Institute? Molly looked down at Lucy on the floor.
Maybe the hospital instead.
Prone to drift, vigorously shook his head, and she wondered why he didn't just speak to them. Molly glanced at his belly, and saw that in his captivity someone had shattered his slate.
You have a better idea where to go? Molly asked.
Prone nodded, and turned his entire body about to point toward the left of the craft.
What's in that direction? Molly asked everyone else.
Perhaps he means the Guardian, Bakar said.
That's right, said Gadam. I remember. Prone put the sphere into slipspace to cut us off from the outside. But he said that the Guardian would be trying to bring us back out. I wonder if we're not too late.
Lucy groaned out loud.
How much time do we have left before that happens?
Days? Prone shook its head.
Hours?
Molly said. Another shake.
Minutes?
This time, Prone nodded. Gadam squawked at that news.
Now that we showed the AI who activated the Guardian that we can cut her off from us, we're sure to have gotten her attention. If the Guardian comes back online, she might just give it orders to stamp out Paxopolis and everyone in it. She could even send in other Guardians to help. A whole army of those things.
So, Bakar said, we are doomed.
Maybe not, said Molly. When we left the Institute, the Guardian had gone into a kind of standby mode. The machines it had already released were continuing to fight the local security forces, but that was it. The Guardian itself wasn't doing anything to help them. If we can stop it before it comes back online, we can stop it from sending Onyx back into real space, and we can probably keep everyone else locked out too. The question is, how are we going to do that?
All eyes turned toward Lucy. She shrugged.
Not really sure how these Guardians are designed or what could bring that thing down. But this bird doesn't have a ton of armament options. Just the forward autocannon and some missile pods on its wings.
Molly focused back on Prone to Drift.
What do we need to do to stop it?
The Hurrigok turned to Lucy and pointed at his own stomach, where his destroyed slate still sat embedded.
Hey, Lucy called to Kareem. We need to get Prone's slate fixed. Is there anything up there we can use?
I think there's a long-range comms pad in a side compartment. It's not exactly like what Prone had before, though. Not sure if it'll work.
Kareem quickly found it and brought it to the rear bay.
If anyone can make it work, it would be Prone, Molly said, giving it to the Hurrigok.
Prone cradled it in his tentacles for a moment, his feathery cilia working feverishly to pull the back off the device and rewire it. Meanwhile, with a spare tentacle, he removed the broken slate, which had been damaged beyond repair. Once the new pad was ready, he slotted it into place. A moment later,
A voice miraculously emerged from the attached pad. "If I can get close enough to the Guardian," Prone said in a calm and steady voice, "I should be able to disable the gravitational field that holds it together." Gadam clapped her hands together.
"Which would bring it all crashing down!"
"Onto Trevelyan and Paxopolis," Bakar responded.
"What about the people there?"
"One problem at a time," Molly said.
Kareem eyed Prone suspiciously.
"How close?"
"Near the armature mainframe, located in the structure that looks like a face. Inside this are its vital systems. If I can reach that location, I can disable its gravitics. This will cause a systemic breakdown that would rend its component segments apart and send it to the ground. It should stop it permanently."
"Which means it wouldn't be able to bring us out of slipspace," Molly said. "Onyx would be safe."
Kareem let out a long breath.
"Yeah, that's close. Really close."
Molly glanced around at the others.
"We're running out of time,
and I doubt anyone at Trevelyan or Paxopolis can even get up there to do this. It's up to us."
They looked to Lucy for permission. She gave a slight smile, and then a thumbs up.
"Well," Bakar said, "what are we waiting for?"
Chapter 36.
"Are you sure you can fly this thing?"
Molly asked Kareem as she stared down at the ship's control panel, with its dizzying array of lights, keys, and throttles.
"How hard can it be?"
Kareem cracked his knuckles.
"I got the guns working, didn't I?"
Gadam peeked around Molly to give Kareem a wary eye.
"You don't die in a fiery wreck if you can't get the guns working."
"Look, it's not all that far, and I can't make any guarantees, but I put plenty of hours in on the simulator. Of course, I was mostly flying hornets and wasps, but I know the Pelican. I can do it."
"This doesn't strike me as the safest idea in the world," Gadam said nervously.
"We don't have any choice," Lucy said from the back.
She'd been trying to hold things together, but she was starting to slur her words and was fading fast.
"Let's get started."
Kareem spun up the Pelican's vertical jets, and the ship hummed to life with new intensity.
"Roger that, Spartan. Everyone got their seats."
He took the controls as confidently as he could manage, and the ship rose off the ground. Then it suddenly tipped over to the right and dragged the tip of the wing along the turf, canting to the side. They all winced, but Kareem wrestled the Pelican back to level.
"Okay. That's a bit touchier than I expected. Sorry about that."
The ship lurched downward, but it holed up shy of smashing into the ground.
"That's it," Kareem said slowly, as if talking to a skittish animal on a fragile leash. "I'm getting the hang of this."
He brought the drop ship high into the air. The Guardian hung in the far distance, probably 100 kilometers away.
"Nice and easy."
He pushed the accelerator lever, and the Pelican shot forward. Strapped in, he and Gadam were fine, but the rest of them, except for Prone to Drift, who had already held on to a strap in the ceiling with his tentacles, almost went tumbling backward. At the last instant, they managed to grab handholds to steady themselves instead. "Sorry," Kareem shouted as the ground far below swept behind them, and the Guardian grew larger in the viewport. Molly felt relieved to be in the air, where at least no more of Onyx's massive monsters could attack them. Of course, they now had to worry about dying in a catastrophic crash, not to mention dealing with that Forerunner machine that seemed to stare gravely at them from far off. It may have been inactive, but its scowling face was still intimidating, even from this distance. Once they felt confident enough to move about the bay, Molly and Bakar scrambled back to Lucy and discovered she'd passed out.
"The pain must have been too much for her," Bakar said.
"Maybe it's for the best," Molly said.
"How so?"
"At least she won't have to watch us die."
It occurred to Molly that they hadn't asked any parents for permission for any of this. Or Kasha or Mendez. They'd barely even asked Lucy. They'd just made a decision and gone with it. What choice did we have? As Bakar had once said, it is simpler to wipe off your blade once it has been blooded. Male wasn't sure that was the best analogy for what they were doing, but it felt close enough. If they failed, they wouldn't have to worry about any kind of punishment from anyone anyhow. They were either going to be heroes, or they were going to be dead. The Guardian soon loomed large in the viewport before them, so big it felt as if they were flying toward a mountain. The lights that had once glowed along its edges were dark now, and the machine's head-like structure had fallen slack. Even its wings had come down from the last time Molly had seen them. To Molly, the Guardian almost looked defeated already. She had to remind herself it was only sleeping, and if the machine managed to rouse itself, they'd be the ones who were done. "How much time do we have left?" Molly asked, prone to drift. "Before it wakes up and sends us back into real space." Molly had half expected Prone to project a countdown clock on his tablet, but he just shook his head back and forth. "There is no way to know for sure," the Huragok said through the slate. "There are no protocols for such an event."
"Excellent," Molly snapped.
"Maybe it'll be all day,"
Gadam said hopefully.
"There's no reason why it can't be all day, right?"
Prone shook his head from side to side, sinuously like a snake. "Since the moment I enclosed Onyx in slipspace, the Guardian's subsystems have no doubt been trying to find a way to get around it, to pick the lock from the inside. It is a machine of incredible power and capacity. It will eventually get through." Molly saw sweat beading on Kareem's forehead. His knuckles had turned white while he gripped the controls, and the Guardian had swelled large enough to fill almost the entire viewport.
"I'm flying as fast as I can."
Below, Molly saw the Pax Institute zip by on their right. Then a number of towers and structures from Paxopolis went past soon after that. Pockets of scorched ground and debris from the initial defense effort remained scattered throughout, columns of black smoke marking where the frigates and fighters had crashed. They would reach Trevelyan soon. Before being cut from outside communication, the Guardian had been hovering over Trevelyan, perhaps looking to take control of the aperture so it could allow ships inside Onyx. Below it sat the landing pad and terminals the Milwaukee had used when Molly had first arrived weeks ago. It seemed as if it had been so much longer than that. Molly wondered about her new parents. Had they been at work when all this happened? Had they made it home? Had they at least found each other? Did they have any idea what had happened to her? Molly hoped not. She wanted them to think she was sitting safely in the dining hall at the Pax Institute, doing anything to pass the time as the day wore on and the adults solved the bigger problems. That way they wouldn't worry about Molly. They wouldn't know a thing about this incredibly brave and stupid thing she and her friends were about to do until it was over. By that time, no matter what happened, it would be too late for them to worry. Then Molly saw the Guardian's wings shift upward slightly, and she knew they'd already run out of time.
"It's moving!" Molly shouted. "It's waking up!"
Kareem, to his credit, didn't panic. He didn't slow down or veer away. He kept straight on course, headed right for the construct's head. If anything, he flew faster now than he had before.
"What's that mean?" Gadam almost sounded relieved. "Can we go home? I mean, what's the point of trying to take on a Guardian that's actually active? We don't have a chance against that, right?"
"The Guardian has managed to open a slipspace communication channel," Prone to Drift said. "But the slipspace enclosure is still holding."
"For how long?" Bakar asked. He was gripping the back of Kareem's chair so hard his fingers were sinking into it.
"It is on the order of minutes. No more." The deadpan delivery of voice from the Huragok's tablet made Molly more anxious than a panicked report would have. Like a stoic diagnosis from a medical machine telling her she had a fatal disease, it just seemed unreal.
"Do we still have a chance to take it apart, Prone?" Molly asked. "Or is this all over?"
Prone to Drift hesitated for a moment. "Our chances of success have plummeted,"
as the Guardian may now defend itself against us. I asked if it's over. The odds have yet to approach zero.
Molly reached over and patted Karim on the shoulder.
You heard him. Take us in.
A thin, determined smile rose on Karim's lips.
My mom's going to kill me for this.
She'll be lucky if she has the chance.
The Guardian seemed to notice them coming, possibly because nothing else hung in the sky. It began to turn, squaring its position with the pelican and staring directly at them. As it did, it opened its wings wide, like an angel about to take flight. Blue energy flared from a series of ports at its center, all the way out to the tips of its wings, and it emitted a deep howling sound that felt powerful enough to shake the entire shield world.
"Can it shoot us down?" Molly asked.
"Its primary weapon systems are not online yet," Prone responded. "But it may have passive systems."
"I got us here."
Karim hauled back the dropship to a sudden hovering stop only a few hundred meters from the Guardian.
"What now?"
"Get me to the Guardian system mainframe. It is located near the head structure," Prone to Drift said. "I can take it from there."
As they edged closer to the Guardian, what looked like a power core in the middle of its torso began to glow brighter and brighter. As it reached a crescendo, it pulsed hard, and a flash radiated out from inside it like the shockwave of an explosion. When the wave hit the pelican, it buffeted the ship hard. Gadam screamed, and Karim fought to keep the ship under control. Rather than continuing on toward the Guardian, he veered away and found that he could steer the ship easily once again.
"If it's going to do that every time we get close, this is going to be one hell of a rough ride," Karim said.
He spun the ship away from the Guardian and brought it around to make another pass at the construct.
"That may be its passive form of defense," Prone to Drift said. "A shunting mechanism."
Another blast sent the pelican back even farther, as though the Guardian were swatting them away with an invisible field of energy.
"There's no way I can get through that," Karim said.
"Not from this angle," Molly said.
"But maybe with a little help from gravity?"
She pointed up toward the sky above the Guardian, and Karim nodded as he got the idea.
"Yeah, the waves are coming at us head-on. That might just do it."
"This is insane,"
Gadam said, as Karim raised the pelican's nose toward the sky and accelerated, bringing them higher and higher with every second.
"It's never going to work. What if we're lining up directly with its weapons?"
"You have any other ideas?" Molly asked.
"This is the only way."
She understood how Gadam felt, though, and she clapped the young goy on the shoulder to show her support. Gadam turned and flung her arms around Molly, pulling her into an almost painful hug. Molly returned the embrace. She needed it as much as Gadam did. Then she gazed out the viewport and watched as they ascended high above the Guardian. It seemed to adjust its position slightly, as though it was observing them as they went. They weren't going to escape its attention.
"What are you planning?" Prone to Drift said, as the pelican leveled off high above the Guardian.
"Getting ready to dive in."
Karim worked the ship's controls and brought its nose around in a gradual arc, so that it was pointing down toward the gigantic creature. The pelican's gravity systems held them to its floor, but the juxtaposition with the Guardian outside made Molly's head spin. They had to be several hundred meters above it, but it was so large it still looked as if they could reach out and touch it from this distance.
"Do you plan to crash this vehicle inside the Guardian?" Prone asked.
Molly realized that they should have probably run this plan by the Huragak before implementing it. Karim grimaced.
"I wouldn't say I plan to crash it, but there may be a strong likelihood of that happening."
"There is no need to put yourself and the others in danger," Prone to Drift said.
"We can't come at the Guardian straight on," Molly said. "It just knocks us away. By coming at it from above, even if it knocks out the power in the ship, gravity will take us the rest of the way."
"I understand your plan."
The Huragak moved toward the back of the passenger bay.
"But there is no need for you to risk your lives."
Molly wasn't sure what Prone was getting at. Then it touched the door release with one of its tentacles to open the pelican's rear ramp. Outside, they could only see open sky. The wind roared into the pelican, tousling Prone's tentacles and their hair. "I can get to the Guardian from here," Prone's slate